Yeah, this one's not on. This is new.
That goes with the.
Yep, this is new, it's not on. So we have the woods and then the lot line adjustment on Main Street for Fillmore one, not this one. This one's just came in.
Did they what?
Mark on this, what did they do to the update?
No. Are we ready, Deb?
Yeah.
Everybody ready? You ready? All right, let's get this meeting going. This is our regular meeting of the planning board on June 21st, first day of summer. Hooray. We're gonna start off with finishing up our meeting with the woods. Wanna go?
Yes, sir.
Now, you're gonna explain to us the changes you've made and the questions that came up from last meeting, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just somewhere everybody can see it.
Brandy.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, I'm Brandy Nelson. I'm a project manager and professional engineer with Tyon Bond, and we're here on behalf of Clover Reach Partners regarding the Woods subdivision, which we've been here before, so nice to see you all again. At last month's meeting, we had given a presentation about the project for the public hearing, and I'll just do a recap of the development scenario, but the one thing that I did wanna present tonight that's a slight change from the last meeting was that we've had some additional title work done on the property. And at one of our early meetings, I had indicated that because of an older subdivision, there were some like orphan parcels that were creating little donut holes on the project that had been designated in a 2007 subdivision, a prior subdivision that had been in play, had been designated to the town. So there was a little out parcel roughly in the north central portion of the property. And then there were two parcels that had been identified as stormwater management areas, again, for the old subdivision that the ownership was unclear on. So the new title work that's been done indicated, and Paul or Andrew, you can correct me if I don't get this precisely right, but indicated that they are still with the parent parcel. So they're with Clover Reach's parcel. What that did was that takes the overall parcel size from 20.64 acres up to 21.38 acres. So it just increases it slightly. So what we did, just recognizing that additional area, was modify lots 10, 11, 12, and 13 to incorporate that new land, because it needs to go with some parcels. So For lot 10, it was 4.93 acres. It's come down to 3.68 acres, and then we've distributed the new land and a little bit of additional land over lots 11, 12, and 13. So lot 11 was 1.49. It's now increased to 2.92. Lot 12 was 0.98. It's now increased to 1.21. And lot 13, which is down here, was 0.6, and that's increased to 1.1. So that's the reason for the change in the acreages of those lots. It's because we've cleared up the title for those orphan or out parcels that we didn't have clear information on previously. Is there anything else that you wanted to add on that?
No, we also cleared up the in the other part of the development on behalf of the village, another parcel too, which was also an orphan parcel. So all of that got cleaned up at the same time.
Okay, great. So yes, so our subdivision is for 21.3 acres. Still 16 lots. It's zoned Hamlet 2, which allows half acre lots. So 16 lots is less than half of what the potential development could be at half acre zoning. The 16 lots, though, is what Clover Reach has proposed consistently since we've made our initial application to allow for a modest development that can be protective of the natural resources around and on the site. And as we've said before, we are proposing the looping road that has a one-way, it's a two-way road from Summit to where it forks, and then a one-way looping road. Again, that is designed to mitigate any potential impacts associated with cutting and filling associated with that road. The road, in terms of lane width and roadway construction, will meet village specifications. We've worked with Mr. Sider to review that. And the supporting reasons for proposing the one-way looping road is to allow for more of the natural environment to be preserved, to minimize the grading impacts associated with the roadway, and in minimizing the grading and also in providing for that narrower road width, what we're able to do ultimately is to provide for the preservation of quite a bit more wooded cover there, which in turn offers more screening and more visual protections to the surrounding neighborhood. We have had this reviewed with both DPW, as I said, but also with the fire department. Working with DPW and Mr. Schmidt, we have also reviewed the sewer and water connection. As I had mentioned previously, 16 houses, we've assumed a four-bedroom construction. That's obviously to be determined, but four bedrooms is conservative, and it gives us a total water and sewer demand of 7,040 gallons per day. That capacity is easily managed within the village's infrastructure. And we've talked to the DEC. Again, Mr. Schmidt and I were on a call with Jamie Malcolm at DEC to talk about sewer and also stormwater. DEC has no concerns about sewer. They remind the village that the village has to just update their permit with that new connection once that happens, and we'll provide whatever engineering plans are necessary at that point in time. Other than that, I mentioned we talked with DEC about stormwater. I guess a couple weeks ago, there was some construction activity occurring further up the hill. DEC got noticed and had an inquiry. They incorrectly assumed that we were doing some clearing work on the property. There's not any clearing work occurring on the property. But because of the old name of Summit Heights that's associated with the old development, there was some confusion as to whether or not any work was occurring on this property. Mr. Schmidt and I had a conversation with Mr. Malcolm, explained that we are undergoing a planning board approval process with you all, explained that it's a new configuration for the site, explained that we've developed a stormwater pollution prevention plan and erosion sediment control plan consistent with the state's requirements, that we've been working back and forth with Mr. Schmidt to review that plan, and that at the time construction commences, that we will be filing for a speedy general permit for construction, again, in compliance with the regulations as we would normally do. So he was satisfied and did not have any further comments on that item. And I think that was everything I had on our list. That was everything I had on our list to cover.
Was there some mention of widening the driveways?
Widening the driveways?
Yes.
The only thing Mr. Sider had asked for the driveways was that we pave the aprons back from the road 20 feet, and we are showing that on the plan. Yeah. I don't know if you were also asking in terms of on-street parking. We had talked previously about not having any on-street parking on the Loop Road. There's plenty of room for driveways and at the parking courts for the houses.
And what's the length of each driveway?
Each driveway is going to vary depending on the particular house site, but they're going to vary from probably 40 to 250 feet. Some of these deeper ones are going to be longer.
On the one-way street, what's the width of the one-way street?
The paved width is 12 feet, so that's the lane width, 12 feet. And then there's 2-foot shoulders on either side, so 16 feet of cleared width for the roadway.
And that's the same all the way around?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And I think you were offering that the village would designate the street upon dedication as no parking on the street.
That's correct.
And I think we were talking about having the restrictive covenants modified so that all homeowners are notified, lot
yeah.
owners, that there's no off-street or on-street parking. It
That's
has to be off-street.
That's right. I actually included that in the proposed declaration.
So we have two means to enforce that, to prevent, you know, there will be the occasional delivery, of course, but, and then Brandy, you submitted in your latest plan submission, C101.1, which actually shows the fire truck delineating going around.
Correct. Right. Yeah. And we have provided that to the chief, and also, basically what we use is tracking software. We work with the local fire departments to get the dimensions on their largest apparatus. And then we're able to, what's shown in the green here is two things. One, the wheel path for the turning radius of the apparatus, and the other is the body overhang, because as you know, some of those apparatus extend quite far beyond their wheels. And so when you get to a curve, the body tends to take a bigger swing than the actual wheels do. So we show both of those things. We've reviewed it with the chief, and he was satisfied that his largest apparatus could maneuver through the roadway without any obstructions.
Well, I talked to Mark because I was concerned that if you did have a delivery truck in there, it would impede a fire truck or an emergency vehicle coming in, but he doesn't see that as a problem.
Is there someone to enforce the no parking on that main? On the main street going around?
On the main street?
Yeah, going around.
I imagine there could be signage, but as Mr. Freeman just said, there'll be a restrictive covenant as well. So when you buy a house in this neighborhood, you'll get something that says, these are some of the rules of this neighborhood. You know, no tree clearing, no parking on the roadway. I think it's up to the village to provide any additional signage if need be, and we could certainly add that at the time of construction if that's the desire of the village.
They'll be the one enforcing it?
The street would be dedicated to the village, so it would be enforced just like any other streets here in the village.
Just to be clear too, before it's dedicated, within the restrictive covenants, we have built in a provision that allows the village to enforce the restrictive covenants no different than the property owners.
Yeah.
So during the interim period of the build out of the development, so to speak, before the road is dedicated, the village still has the right to enforce the restrictive covenant, and that would include the no on street parking.
Okay.
And if there's a dispute over the covenant, that means the village gets involved in that?
Does the village get involved? They can. So what we've done is we've offered the village, ordinarily the village would not be involved. So ordinarily these are just, it's a private contract between the developer and himself and those acquiring it. However, here, because of the nature of, for example, the limitation on tree cutting is one of them, as well as the issue of no parking, we have built into the covenants the village ability to also enforce. So if 10 lots were sold and nobody was enforcing, the village has the right to step in and enforce the covenants. And there is an attorney's fees clause provision.
So, but if there's disputes, as you well know, in New York State case law, if a covenant causes harm, then the owner has rights to dispute that covenant.
No question about that.
Okay.
All owners, so if one, there was one rogue lot, so to speak, all other owners have the right to enforce the covenant against that owner.
Okay.
In addition to the village.
He's their lawyer. Give me a minute.
Paul Freeman. His name is Paul Freeman.
Okay.
Yes.
I knew that. I couldn't come up.
I know. I'm
trying to stay quiet back here.
Are there any other questions?
I have one last question.
Yes, sir.
On the 6.45 acres that are outside the proposed area, how are you going to handle the runoff? I mean, where does that come?
The 6.45 acres that are outside of the proposed area?
Yeah.
So the way this parcel has been developed over time, there is development uphill, so south of the property, that has occurred. And to my knowledge, just based on looking at the old maps, there was not stormwater controls put into place. So consequently, that water runs down through this new, the Woods subdivision. And so we've had to manage it in a couple of different ways. What we're doing is allowing some of that water to bypass through the site and out through this one drainage area, which is taking some water that naturally is flowing that way. There's just, ideally, we'd like to capture it and cut it off and send it into the village's drainage system on Summit Ave, but we can't do that just based on the grade. So we're allowing it to pass through the site to bypass. And then what we're doing is individually for each house site, there's individual stormwater management for the house roof runoff and the driveway runoff. And we're doing that in bioswales, bioretention areas. And then for the roadway network, we are capturing the stormwater and treating it in a stormwater management pond, again, consistent with the design requirements of the DEC. And then also we're making some improvements to a drainage condition that's parallel to Summit. There's a swale that runs from the development uphill down into the back of the property, and it's Dallas and who's the other property owner? Dallas and your butter right here.
Lamont. Or no.
I think it is.
On the north side?
On the south side.
Is it Wheeler?
Lamont is the large property on the
right. And then the ones that are to the north?
I can't remember either.
But what happens now is that there's runoff that comes from uphill, and then it comes down through all the backyards on these properties. And what we're gonna do, and what we reviewed with Mr. Sider, was we can capture it here on the south side of Woods Road, and we can convey it into the conservation land so that it stops flooding these properties. So there's a kind of a group of different practices that we're gonna employ to manage the stormwater. The objective ultimately is for the water from the new development to be treated through the stormwater system and then discharged into the conservation area where the water sheet flows off anyway, and ultimately then down into the lake, but having been through a treatment process first. And then taking advantage of some opportunities with the existing grades and some proposed improvements to redirect some stormwater that's coming from uphill to not impact some of the adjacent neighbors' properties.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. I asked this a while ago of your colleague, I can't recall his name right now. What is the loading you're using on that end of the equation? In other words, the storm event, are you using historical data or are you using future projections to accommodate climate change?
So no one uses future projections. So we follow the DEC's stormwater design manual. Stormwater Management Design Manual, and we use data from I'm blanking completely, from TR 16 or 20, George, I can't remember.
Extreme storm event.
But it's historic storm data, and we're modeling for a number of different storm events up to a 100-year storm event. But again, all of that data is look-back data.
Right, so you say no one's using that, but everyone will be using projections to comply with the New York State climate law. That's one of the factors in there, the rule is to be made, but
yeah.
Since this development is not built yet, it's just something that...
I'm aware of that in terms of sea level rise, but I'm not aware of that in terms of stormwater management. I don't think it's a bad idea. I'm just telling you, right now in the current stormwater management design manual, we're using the TR20 data from Natural Resource Conservation Service data that's been collected. And it was recently updated. I think it's like the last 30 years. It previously was the last 50 years. So it is showing more intensity. And so as designers, we've all seen stormwater features grow larger just in recognition of the historical data showing higher peaks in the intensity. Not so much more rain overall, but higher peaks.
Right. But that's exactly, this is the exact terrain that would be subject to those peaks.
Yeah, which is why we've got stormwater management features designed throughout the property in a variety of different ways, both at the house level.
Is there redundancy or just?
You know, we're designing to what the standards require. And we're treating it both at the house level and at the roadway level.
Brindy, I think I recall this conversation, but didn't we figure out that the net result was that less stormwater will run off of the property post-development than...
I'll be honest, I have not looked at those numbers in a while, but okay. Customarily the design objective is to reduce your post-construction runoff volume and intensity, so your peak discharge off the property from the pre-construction level. So our modeling always shows that, but the exact numbers I don't remember off the top of my head.
Any other questions, board? Rob?
I have a couple, just to button things up from the public hearing. I mean, I took like 15 pages of notes, so I wanted to make sure that some of the salient points, I mean, we've covered these, but just to make sure we hit them again.
Sure.
And again, planning board members, if anything came up tonight to have the applicant address it. You've already hit on a lot of them, honestly, in your submissions. We've already covered the parking, the restrictions, the tree cutting. As far as your visual submissions, there was some public comment that said they wanted a sheet test or a balloon test, which I have never seen on a residential subdivision before. If you could just take us through briefly, Brandy, I know you've taken us through it in detail, but your visual analysis was a line of sight from this side of the reservoir, and you actually did a rendition that depicted what the build out would look like. And then there was some restrictions as far as coloring and structure to try and minimize that. And then you also talked about the tree cover. I think I hit the high points on the visual.
You did.
So I guess the question is, does the board have any problem, umbrage, with the comments that were happened or that were made? Do you think that they sufficiently address the visual for you to make a decision, especially as far as seeker purposes?
I'm satisfied with the visual.
Everyone?
I already expressed.
You made your comments on the modeling and everything else. So I just, if we don't want them to come back next month and say, well, wait, we wanted you to do more. Tonight's the night we tell them if they needed to do something, to do something. So I wanted to impanel the board to make sure that we're all on the same page as far as that. We did get a letter in the last month from PB Inc. Regarding some CECRA questions. And I went back through the part one, and I think they've been addressed, but just to hit what the comments were. Substantial change in the use of land. Does the Woods development propose a substantial change in the use of land? And as the board's aware, and as the applicant has presented, a 16-lot subdivision in the area where a much larger subdivision has been approved and could be approved isn't a substantial change in the use of land. It's not in conflict with the comprehensive plan, and it's in compliance with zoning. They haven't had to go and get any area variances or variances at all to proceed with this project. So I think that point has been met. There's a comment about the reduction in wildlife habitat, and yes, residential subdivision can change residential or wildlife habitats, but Brandy, could you touch on there? I think there was two species of bat that were the only complication that came up.
Yeah, so we are in a region. We haven't identified that the bats are here specifically, but we are in a region where there are two different species of threatened or endangered bat. It's a northern long-eared bat is the primary bat species of concern. And what we do is work with the DEC to either limit the time of year when we do any tree clearing activity, that's so that you're not disturbing the bats when they're breeding or raising young, or we have a survey done with the DEC and a bat biologist who go out and specifically check the particular site for the presence of bats prior to doing any tree clearing. When we were talking with you guys several months ago and thought we maybe would be getting an approval through the winter, we thought we could get our clearing done in the winter time before the bats emerge from hibernation. At this point, just depending on how things go, we may be needing to approach the DEC directly just to come out and do a survey at the property or give us clearance to do any clearing. So.
And then the other thing we raised in the PB Inc. letter was conflicts or potential conflicts with community plans and goals and an impairment of the community character. And I think that's addressed, again, through the comprehensive plan and the zoning. And you guys, did an initial analysis when there was a request for a moratorium on the project before the village board. You analyzed the BOA, the Brownfield Opportunity Area, and its impacts. And I think that the village board decided not to do a moratorium and go forward. And I think you designated or delineated the difference between this area and what's exactly in the BOA areas as being an outside residential development, which is actually approvable in consistent with the BOA.
Right.
So in reading that letter, I didn't see any conflicts or issues that we need to back up and readdress unless you guys have anything that you wanted to present.
I don't think so.
Another comment that came up at least a couple of times was the economic impacts of a subdivision. And while I don't have any empirical data on how many dollars and cents a subdivision or what the people will be or what the houses they will be, we've all sat here and said that these are probably gonna be $300,000 to $1 million houses, and that increases the tax base for the village. And it's up to the village board as they go forward to budget accordingly, have resources accordingly to be able to deal with the subdivision. If it was a very significant rise in population or the number of houses or development, like the previous two subdivisions ago, the Burvey subdivision, we were almost doubling the size of the village at that time. That could put a financial burden on the village that could trigger, we need to study the economic impacts of that. I don't, and I don't think you appreciate, and speak now if you do, that this type of project of this scope needs any outside economic impact analysis to give it any clarity or it has any challenges because of that.
The only other thing I would add is that the infrastructure that's going to be put in will be borne by the developers, and it will be new, so it's not as if we're, we're asking the village to construct new infrastructure. That will be done as part of the development process. And so the village will be granted then new infrastructure, which has a fairly long lifespan to it when done consistent with the village's code.
And it's well within the village's water and sewer capacity. The well field was updated in 2003 and the sewer plant was just upgraded. So the village is in good shape there. I mean, the horror story is you've all seen the beech nut factory on the thruway, and they went in and that village put in a lot of water infrastructure for them, and then beech nut went away. And the residents couldn't even afford an ounce of water after that because they had the ability to produce so much. That's the type of development where you've got to analyze the economic impacts to a village if it doesn't sustain or goes away or something like that. And I don't think we're there. So I think we're in a modest position here. Other than that, were the tree delineations on your plan, were those new?
Just in terms of wanting to be clear about the desire to preserve large trees, the applicant had a specific tree survey done where all trees over 12 inches in diameter have been surveyed. Don't quote me on it, but it was like 780 or 840. 880 trees. So it's a considerable number of trees. So we do have those shown on the plan, just in terms of being able to show that in the rears of a lot of the lots, there are a lot of these substantial trees. In the central Loop Road area, there are a considerable number of those trees, just to give you all the understanding of how significant a resource those trees are. And as Mr. Freeman had said earlier, there'll be a covenant to restrict clearing because the proposed development is called the Woods because they want it to be maintained as wooded.
And I think the last thing I have is so there's no land swap or boundary line adjustment with the village on any of the conservation lands at this point. They're retaining the lands that they bought, that they own, that they're going to develop. But the trails, as you had proposed, and the connectivity that you had proposed, that remains as originally proposed. You haven't pulled those out or taken those back.
Just
as you had proposed them, that workable for settlers. Okay, just wanted to make sure.
I also have some further comments based on reading the comments that came in from the public. So I guess now is the time to go over that.
Yep.
So in reading the short form, assessment form, the impact assessment, there were two items on the list that I believe are of concern. That's number one, will the proposed action create a material conflict with an adopted land use plan or zoning regulations? And I think it does. The comprehensive plan for the village of Philmont on page 6, the recommendation states the area south of the reservoir should fit into the village better. Varying densities, as is the case throughout the village, should be implemented. The street pattern should match the types of streets elsewhere in the village. And clearly this plan does not do that. The proposal offers no varying density. More than half the houses meet rural low density zoning regulations rather than Hamlet 2, which Hamlet 2 encourages the historical pattern of one and two family housing. Furthermore, the street width, 12 feet, although you're getting approval from the fire department, it's also the street pattern. So this is an uninterrupted 1/4 mile of a very narrow road. This matches nothing in the village. Whether you go to Hamlet 2 or to Hamlet 1, you will find a couple of streets that are one or two blocks long, but they always have ways to get off to another location. So there's really the safety issue of the 12-foot width. You have Amazon Prime, you have FedEx, you have UPS, you have mom with stroller. These sort of conflicts cannot be handled on this road. And there's been no effort to mitigate that issue. The request, so the request in the comprehensive plan has nothing to do with aesthetics. It's really about safety and economics. One of the reasons for that varied density is the amount of taxpayers you have per linear foot of road width, which of course will create more income from property taxes. I know the houses cost more, that will make it more, but it's really the density that pulls it in. So it's conceivable that the other village, those existing in the village now, will be subsidizing, for instance, the snow plowing, because the linear feet of snow plow per taxpayer is way more in a development like this. So these are some of the issues that come up when you vary so much from the comprehensive plan. A lot of work went into the comprehensive plan, and there are reasons for it, which I think are definitely getting overlooked. So together, I believe this does create a material conflict. The other one is, will the proposed action impair the character or quality of the existing community? Yes, it will. Yes, the underlying zoning supports this project, but the community's take on this environmentally pristine acreage, and this is many of the comments were on this particular issue, which has laid fallow for decades, has been ignored. The wetlands are not at a scale to trigger a seeker review, but it's the extraordinary insensitivity on the part of the developers towards the community's pleas to incorporate the heart of the village's natural environment into this proposal is just simply unacceptable. And I would say it's even causing some unrest. So again, going back to... So going back to the comprehensive plan, page four, this is in regard to the subdivision on the land south of Summit Lake. I'm quoting, "Plan cooperatively with future developers of the designated subdivision. Two, encourage future housing development to be consistent with the historical building patterns of the village. Three, restrict subdivisions of uniform lot sizes in favor of varying lot sizes and densities. And four, the street design should reflect the established village pattern." It's very clear in the comprehensive plan. So how did we get to this tremendous conflict? What went wrong? So I think the problem was the planning phase was skipped. Holding the required meeting with the village and the public hearings, that's not planning. So what happened was we went from a vision, and I'm not knocking vision. We all need vision to get things done. But unfortunately, we went from vision, went right into what we call in the industry design development. We did not have planning, which would incorporate what the community is now saying in all these comments. Planning consists of three viable alternate plans, which I was not on the board. I do not believe those were presented. It's not in the minutes, but that's where you start, and then you take community input based on those three alternatives. And therein lies a solution that can meet your return on investment for this housing and preserve the natural piece of the heart of the natural piece of the Philmont Village.
Am I supposed to respond, or were you just making a comment? I just want to make sure.
These are comments. I think they're substantial, and they're based on community input.
So I will just, I'll start with thanking you for bringing those comments to our attention. And I will just struggle a moment to square the circle. It's almost as if those two items you're raising are contradictory to one another, because to have the traditional block pattern here elsewhere in the village would potentially result in significant environmental impacts. And although there wasn't a public planning process, which my understanding of your regulations does not require that, there certainly was a very large amount of evaluation of the property and its unique characteristics, and identifying what is important in the community, you know, without needing to do so under the subdivision regulations. Andrew and his team had public forums, took comment from people, and considered that. And what we heard was be respectful of the land and the space. And so in terms of following the zoning for the site and being respectful of the land and coming up with a viable development program, that's what you're seeing here. And it's why we're asking for a deviation from the roadway configuration, because it allows us to be more respectful of the land. Yes, it's not a block pattern, but that would result in a very large amount of clearing, a lot of roadway, and yes, you would probably need to have a lot more houses. And from everything I've heard in the public comments, I haven't heard that people want to see a lot more houses on this piece of property. So I think all development projects and the seeker process itself is one of gathering information, sharing that information with you all. We use that information to inform the design. We look at your regulations, we look at the state's regulations, we look at the county's regulations, and we try to strike a balance that meets all the objectives as reasonably as possible. And sure, not everyone is always happy with absolutely everything, and we understand that. I'm sure Andrew would like to have other things on the site that he's not able to do, but we feel that this is a responsible development that will add 16 new homes to the community. It will install new infrastructure, and it's being really respectful of the natural environment while still allowing a modest amount of development to occur. So, you know, I appreciate the comment. This exercise is always a balancing test, and that's what we've come up with at this point.
So in that balance, what's driving this project is the saving of the trees, which I appreciate, but you're also kicking the can down the road, as your attorney knows, when these covenants will not hold up. Someone wants the playground for their children, they want to put solar panels on the roof. All they have to prove is harm. They are experiencing harm due to the covenant. So that just kicks the can down the road. And I don't agree with you that you can't get more houses in there, but looking at placing them in a way that's not on the sensitive, the extremely sensitive environmental parcels. And it would have been great to see that plan. I didn't see that alternate. And all planning processes start with three plans so that the community can step in and say, what are the benefits of the three? And I just didn't see that happening.
Right, and it's not in your code.
Let me just respond to that real quick.
For
number one, plan number one is build 51 houses that are already approved. I mean, that's plan number one. They could have literally done that.
Isn't that retired?
Yeah, that's also quarter acre.
The plan is approved. We could have built 51 houses.
Well, they changed the zoning. We could have done 27.
Okay,
and
27.
Cleared and graded 100% of the lot.
But I think the overarching concern of the community is the protection of the view shed to the greatest extent possible to keep the treed area. And I disagree with you significantly about whether covenants can be enforced. I've been involved in no less than probably 10 to 15 litigations where covenants were enforced.
So we have to litigate
them. It's kicking the can down the road.
Maybe we'll hire you, Paul.
Maybe.
I mean, I think what I would point out is two things, like there are no other restrictions on tree clearing in the entire village. Anyone can cut down every tree in their entire lot. There are 13 lots on Chestnut Court that were just cleared. Completely.
Cleared. Did anybody complain?
Did you guys?
All right, hold it. Let's get out of hand.
This is false equivalence. This is not what we're talking about.
We're trying to do something better.
That's our view.
Why didn't you buy it? I made enough money at the time. We're not doing no public comment. Isn't the hearing still open?
Only if the board needs to open the hearing because there was additional information that deserves comment. And as I said initially, the revisions that they made were in response to existing comments. They haven't made a change or anything substantial. It's in the discretion of the board if you want to open it up for public comment.
I don't see any reason for it.
We do.
We do.
We do. That's why we're here.
Does anybody, I mean, it's in the chairman's discretion, but we're not going to do this for 6 months where everybody says the same thing they said for four of them.
Please,
we're not getting it. We'll close the meeting.
Okay.
So if you want an opportunity, I'm trying to get you there. If somebody has something new, a new distinct point, a new issue, something that needs to come up, it's in the board's discretion if they want to take additional comment. As I said, we had 15 pages of notes, everybody's comment. We left that meeting, no one got shut down, no one said they couldn't speak. At some point, the board needs to get into its deliberative process, and that's what we're doing tonight by getting into that. So again, Mr. Chairman, if anybody has something new or distinct to bring up that they forgot to cover last time, that the board needs to be made aware of, you can open it up to that.
Okay.
I think we had 11 letters, 11, from the public. None, not one from an abutter. We've covered just about everything we can possibly cover.
We have some abutters here that weren't notified.
I can address that.
Yes, there we go.
My farm abuts this proposal by about 800 feet. And I don't know even who to address this to, but my wife Lucy, she and I own that farm. It's the old Wright Dairy Farm. And we didn't get a letter or a phone call or anything. This is the first meeting we're attending, because despite all of that abutment, and yes, we are direct abutters, we were not made aware of this. If it weren't for a neighbor that mentioned some meetings that are going on about this project, which is, you know, well far along, we wouldn't even know to be here tonight. So I don't know who to address that to, but why didn't we get any type of...
I can explain that for you, because the New York State Town Law and the Village Law does not require noticing neighbors in writing because of a subdivision project. The Village Code and Zoning Code doesn't require that either. When you bought your land, you should have talked to your attorney, or you could have. You could have done a zoning analysis. What is around me? You would have heard about the 150-lot Burby subdivision that was next to you. You would have heard about the 51-lot Maddox House subdivision that was next to you. And then recently, now we have a 16-lot that's been in development for, or at least discussion, for six or eight months.
Since December.
And I appreciate it. I get this comment at every public hearing where there's good attendance. Someone says, I didn't get told about it. Well, that's just unfortunately not how it works.
But if you're looking for comment by a direct abutter, we're here. And I think we're the only one. Well, no, I shouldn't say. There's some smaller parcels down around Summit Road. But, you know, we have some concerns because we have some wet, low-lying areas of our farm, which are just south of the Summit Avenue development. And, I mean, I'm not an environmental engineer. We don't know. But depending on the clearing and the grading of this, if that puts any further development on the Summit Heights portion, which is possible, and we all know this is changing right now, year after year, that could result in, there's a swale, it's right off that Joshua Essig Nature Trail. As you come into it, there's a swampy area that's right next to one of our hay fields, and it's quite wet already now. So that's just a concern of ours, that, you know, that there's additional pressure put on that that flows then into our farm.
But they've addressed that several times, you know, the stormwater pollution.
But we weren't here because we didn't know to be here.
I'd be happy to talk to you more about it.
We'd like to just, if it's appropriate to discuss it now.
I can speak to the stormwater issue. So I believe this is your parcel here. You are uphill from
That's the direct.
So it's very confusing on the plan, but here's the lake down here, right? And then the property slopes up towards Chestnut.
Overlook Court is
right here.
This is the ridge. So water from our property slopes this way.
Right.
It doesn't go towards your property at all. The area you're talking about that's wet is over here. Of the other Summit, the other conservation area that wraps around Summit Heights.
Right.
So the clearing that just happened on Chestnut Court and the grading that's gonna happen could directly impact your property, because that is right up the hill.
That is not
right
this
above
project.
It, but that has nothing to do with.
So all this water flows down towards the roadway network.
You're gonna still abut one lot as you abut right now.
Right.
One house will be built next to your property, but no water flows in that.
No, direction. My concern wasn't up there. It was that, you know, if that puts additional pressure on the Summit Heights area, we're just below that. So what flows downhill from you ultimately flows to us, even though right there we don't abut, we abut further up.
Yeah, everything here flows toward the lake and in this direction. Everything on our lot flows this way. Nothing goes towards that. And we don't own any property back on the Summit Heights area.
Can I get your name, sir?
Yes, I'm Peter Faniello. That's spelled F like Frank, E-N-I-E-L-L-O.
And I'm sorry, what was your name?
Andrew Personet. I'm with Clover Reach.
Yeah, I knew that, I just couldn't remember your name.
It's all right, it'll get worse.
have a quick clarification.
There's hands up here, so can we address that, please?
Are these new issues?
Yeah, new issues, yes. That's all I just like clarification.
All right, go ahead.
I mean, you were saying that you were willing to close the meeting because there were no abutment comments, and simultaneously you're saying that none of the abutters had to be notified.
No, I said that I had not received any letters from any abutters.
Right, and simultaneously, none of them had to be notified of?
Legally, they did not.
Right.
No, and I said that we would close down the meeting. If it gets to disruptive banter, then we'll just close it down and start it another day. That was my point.
So are there any more public comments, or it's closed down?
It's up to the chairman. He just asked if anybody had anything new.
I think there should be, we're taxpayers, we should be involved.
Yeah, but we're not gonna sit here for 6 months and go through the same questions.
No, we're not, but we have questions that weren't addressed that we could address right now.
All right, if you have a question that has not been addressed, go ahead.
So, like, a lot of the questions haven't been addressed, so that's what I'm confused about. Like, the visual representation and all of that, like, that hasn't actually been addressed.
Actually, I brought that up a few minutes ago.
I know, it hasn't been addressed.
It's not clear.
I asked the board, it's in their discretion, are they satisfied with what the applicant has submitted? Or do they want more based upon public comment? The conclusion was they were all satisfied, or majority was satisfied with what was submitted. So that's where the.
Can I make a comment about that? With that, the visual presentation that we saw, though, that was when you were saying that no trees are gonna be cut. But then we heard that 50%, half of the trees could be cut down. Do we have visual representation of that?
And that there's no plan I've heard about that would be enforcing any of this. And if people are buying, like, luxury homes, like, why do they care? They just pay the fee.
The enforcement, we've talked about a couple of times, is the restrictive covenants that the ownership can enforce and that the village can enforce. So that issue is better, as the applicant offered in response to the comment that happened a few minutes later.
Who is the village that would enforce it?
It would be the code enforcement officer or an action authorized by the village board. And as Mr. Freeman indicated, if it's done by the village, their costs and fees can be recouped against the owner in the context of the action. Is that the most desirable? No. But when every other development and every other piece of land, you can cut whatever tree you want. Those are the restrictions and the aids that they're willing to put on to aid the cause. That's the point that has been made to the planning board. It's up to the planning board if they say, no, we want more, we want less, or we want something different.
They just don't care, okay.
Just a new concern?
Yes, and because I heard something new. Randy stated that there would be no tree clearing. You used the word no.
She never said that.
So I'm confused. Is it allowed that the combined clearing that Andrew and you have spoken of, the combined clearing from the development plus whatever clearing the homeowner wants can be up to 50%, but you quickly said the covenant, no tree clearing, so which is it?
If that was what you understood, that is not accurate. No, what is being proposed as a covenant is that there be no more than 50% of the large trees cleared, and the house siting is situated such to try and avoid clearing any of those trees. What I also said was that the one-way looping road allows us to limit the amount of grading that occurs, and again, allows preservation of trees. And if you recall from our visual resource assessment, because the property is sloped, this would be a little bit of a terrace development. And so by having that one-way looping road, the trees that are preserved in the lower part of the terrace offer screening to the upper parts. And that's beneficial from a visual impact standpoint.
So the lower lots there, if they have big trees that are on the lake side of their houses, they could cut 50% of whatever was there now.
That's correct.
Okay, no, that's serious.
Yeah.
But the point is that you could clear all the trees on your lot. Please let me finish. So we follow the regulations that are in the village code, and we do a seeker review, which is the environmental review. And as I said before, it's a balancing test. So where we know we might have impacts, because development is going to be an impact, right? It's different than the undeveloped land that's there. I think we all acknowledge that. What we're trying to do is offer mitigations. And so the mitigation that we're offering is that we will restrict the amount of clearing to allow for more screening. So that is something that Andrew and his team are offering as a mitigation. Whether the board wants to accept it, that is up to you, as Mr. Fitzsimmons said.
The conceptual rendering does not, what does it represent now? The conceptual rendering that is perhaps acceptable. What percentage of trees, the tree clearing, does that represent?
How many are going away rather than what we
I don't
say?
Know, because we don't have the houses sited, right? So we've given, when you do a plan like this, you show how the lots will be configured, you show the regulatory setbacks for each of the lots, and then you show how a house could sit on the property. It's not a site plan review, it's a subdivision, so there's a difference there. In a site plan, you show precisely where everything is going to be, and what the board approves is precisely where everything is going to be. In a subdivision, you show that you meet the zoning of the property and that a house and its various features, a driveway, stormwater management, can all fit within that area. In this case, we've actually expanded the subdivision plan to show larger trees because it's important to us to protect a large number of those trees. So we're not showing, you know, if I want to buy one of these lots and build a house, I'm going to have the option to put that house wherever it's allowed according to the building code. We're just trying to give you a representation of how we will be mitigating.
Do you have an estimate of though when you have to clear the roadways, whatever size they are, how many trees have to come down just for that part of it?
Yes.
And what is that visual?
Even if every lot owner cleared 50% of their lot, the total trees pre-development to post-development would be 60%. And that's because we are minimizing the roadways, we are keeping the trees in the conservation areas that we are turning over to the village. And so those trees will not be cleared unless the village decides to clear those trees. So even if every single homeowner took 50% of the trees off their lot, our post-development total will still be 60% of trees conserved from
the pre-development. So you end up with 30% from the beginning?
No, 30% would be the total removed. And it's because we're clearing very little for the roadway and we're keeping a lot for the, isn't it like 5 acres total? Like it's
5 acres total
turned
will be
over
undeveloped.
To the village. So there's, we're keeping 2/3 of the trees no matter what, as long as, yes, the covenants are enforced.
It's erosion that worries us. You know,
so
all of that taken out.
This is on the same point. I just want to be really clear. You said you're taking, there are, homeowners are allowed to take down 50% of the larger trees. Are they able to take down 100% of the smaller trees?
We are only accounting for trees 12 inches or larger.
So they can take down a significant amount, which is a significant percentage then.
Yes.
50% of the large ones and up to 100% of the smaller ones.
That's correct.
And what is the visual reference?
I just wanted to point out for everybody, this is the edge of the lake. So the clearing we're talking about is just on these lots. There is still the 10 acres of wooded lot between the lake and our property that's being subdivided.
Yeah.
How far does that go?
The closest point in the subdivision is 150 feet. The average is something over 200 feet.
Can you just show us where the 10 acres lies in there, how that looks?
From the blue line to the orange line. This is all conservation area.
So it's about twice the length of, from the back of this room to the front of the room, about twice or three times?
I think 200 feet is far, far greater than.
Well, I mean the 150 feet.
I'm not sure how big that.
So I'm still curious what the visual that we've seen represents. Like, does that represent trees down, like the maximum amount of trees that can come down, or no?
We used an actual photo of the leaf off condition. Mm-hmm. So an actual photo shows the trees that are there currently.
So that'll be very different.
Well, please keep in mind though that from the north side of the lake, looking back, you were looking at this buffer that Andrew just mentioned remains. That's conservation land that remains. And so you see things in your foreground, right?
Yeah.
those things provide screening of things in the rear ground. I don't know what's beyond that house there. That house provides screening.
It's not on a hill.
It's this way, so you can see everything.
You get my point, though.
Up the hill.
Yes.
Right, but if you remember what I said before, when we did the line of sight analysis through the property, we actually like cut a section through the property terraces, and by saving trees and by preserving trees in this loop, we preserve the screening potential, and that's really the point.
All right, you go ahead. Enough with the trees.
All right.
Okay, thank you. I have questions on the roadbed and the truck route. A truckload of stone from Colorado's so minimal is 20 to 25 tons. An aggregate truck, you know, 20 to 25 tons. Paving truck from Albany Asphalt, 20 to 25 tons. A concrete truck, 20 to 25 tons. Conservatively, where's the truck route going to be, and how's this going to impact the village and the planning board? I haven't heard anything. Summit Street is an 8-ton limit. Roxbury Road is 4-ton. How are you going to get there?
I don't know. Is that our...
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's a planning board issue. I mean, it's means and methods of how they're going to get to the site. Usually the weight limits preclude, you know, local delivery.
Local delivery is... Yeah. One thing, you know, 25 tons of stone delivered on a daily basis is a different
large ask based on zoning. So I don't really think there's any grounds for the planning board to require a truck route.
Well, I think they should consider that because it's pretty considerable impact on the village, a truck route and the abutting neighbors around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is your name?
George Brown.
How do you spell the last name?
I have one more brief question. Can you give us a list of you said six species of bats?
Two.
Okay, can you give us the list of what they are, please?
Because there are other
species up there of concerns, and bats are on the low level.
So I just want to be perfectly clear that we make our inquiry through the New York State Natural Resource Heritage Program.
Not the DEC, though.
That is the DEC. It's the heritage branch of the DEC. It is. This is consistent.
I think you should review that because.
So we wrote them a letter. We sent them the plan. They asked for the coordinates on the system. They run it through their database, and we received the information back, and it's been incorporated into the seeker long form.
Yeah.
I think all that information is on the website, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I have a question for the
no,
Deb, attorney.
Deb.
Hey, just one question. Tom pointed out the significant discrepancies between the comprehensive plan and this plan. Should that be enough to trigger a review, that more intensive review? And if not, why not?
That's up to the board. I've read the comprehensive plan, and I don't agree with all of them.
The comprehensive plan is a guidance document for the village board to adopt zoning. So if the village board wants to take up different zoning, new zoning, and I think the village board has actually discussed, just based upon the age of the comprehensive plan, reinitiating a comprehensive plan review for this purpose. But it's not just because someone draws some aspects from the comprehensive plan that this project gets halted, stopped, changed, or, I mean, and that was kind of the inquiry. They've already weathered that test when there was a request, should there be a moratorium on the project to allow those sorts of things to happen. And the village board acknowledged that the zoning is the zoning, and it's been what it's been up there, and what based upon what the applicants have proposed, they viewed it, they're not the board approving it, but they viewed it as not a significant negative impact. So, or at least the majority. So that's why we're here.
Question for the attorney.
Go ahead, Kathy.
You had mentioned you were going through the list of some concerns and conflict with community plans, goals. I don't recall the BOA ever noting that a housing development would be part of the plans.
I think the point was this is outside the BOA area, and that this point the applicant made initially when that
well,
issue
well, it's
came
outside the direct area, but the lake is fully in the BOA plans, and anything that happens on the shores of the lake is going to affect how that's restored and affect what goes on downstream, and also retaining the watersheds.
Again,
so,
that was brought up to the village board on whether they should adopt a moratorium to even analyze that further for a 3-month period, and it was declined.
Well,
because
maybe things have changed when people talk about it and community has input. Maybe people see things a little differently. How can we do this when people get to come to the hearing, hear what you say, and there's really not much time to ask questions or plan together. I don't understand how this is enough time for such a big thing to happen to this part of the lake.
And I understand your frustration and I understand what you're saying, but the issue is these people bought this land with a development project in mind. They looked at the zoning code, what had been approved, what they could get approved, and they believe they have made full and adequate compromises to make it work with the village and work with the comprehensive plan and work with the zoning. As I sit here, there's not a single sentence in the zoning code that they're not in compliance with, that I have to say, you can't do this, you gotta do something different. They could come in and say, we don't wanna put any restrictions on tree cutting whatsoever. The zoning allows what they propose to do there, and I don't have a tool in my box that says you can't. Yes, people say secret, 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 but for visual analysis, it's like, you know, when the town of Livingston, there was an eager cell tower application in the view shed of Alana. The test is it going to dissuade people from going to Alana because there's a cell tower in the backdrop now? And you can't necessarily answer that. You can't say that the visual impacts are so significant and negative here based upon their ability to develop in accordance with zoning that it's gonna dissuade, I don't even know what it would dissuade.
Did the planning board ever receive from SHPO the elevations that they are the developers sent to contact SHPO? Is there any letter saying that they've written off historic preservation, that there's no effect?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
you do have that.
Yes.
We have never seen
it. It's on the website, even.
I think there were two.
Whose website?
The village.
The village.
It's in the document.
I have a question for the lawyer, Mr. You said, according to the secret, there would be no impact of the development because you're comparing the development to the plans that were approved in 2005. But shouldn't you be comparing it to what you have presently?
No, everything gets a fresh look and a fresh start and a hard look. That's what the law requires as far as a secret review. And I'm not saying we're gonna compare it to the previous ones. I put them out there because they were approved. They were challenged in court, in three levels of court, and they were upheld.
But that's relevant to what's happening now. This should be compared to what we have presently, right? So we should be saying, does this development impact the present environmental situation, not...
Well, here's the thing, and Brandy touched on it, there's impacts, and she said there will be an impact by this becoming not open land anymore in a residential subdivision with 16 lots. The planning board's objective, and they're challenged with, is to see, is there going to be any significant negative environmental impacts to the delineated categories that the secret form sets out? And if there are, is there mitigation? And the planning board hasn't identified any particular area that's a significant negative environmental impact by this project at all. And the applicant has already come in from the start with mitigation that they've offered. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, that's why I said earlier to the board, tonight's your night. We're not gonna have them go home and come back next month and say, well, wait, I saw a bald eagle. Well, a bald eagle, how does that impact? Is it endangered? Is it threatened? Does it need to be dealt with?
There are four nesting bald eagles.
But they're offering to do this development in full compliance without disturbing them. Within their legal right to do so, is all I'm saying. You may not like it, but I don't have anything in my toolbox, as I've said, that says they can't do what they're offering.
Right, I'm just concerned about impact and what I thought you had said. We're comparing the impact.
No, just for the record again, this is a new subdivision with a fresh look and a hard look, and that's what the challenge is. That's what the board's doing.
Mm-hmm. So impact.
I would just echo what she's saying, which is that we keep being told, oh, this is so much better than 51 houses or 200 houses. But in fact, we're all looking at it for what it is now and the impact it has now.
Yeah, and I haven't seen a major residential subdivision where the developer hasn't come in and swung the hammer and said, fine then, I'm gonna do 76 lots. They always come in with, here's the maximum build out. They take their lumps, they're beating, they look at their infrastructure cost, and they wean it down to a point that works for them and works for the village and the rest of the people. This applicant came in with a relatively, I'll use Brandy's word, it's a characterization, a modest subdivision with some mitigation from the beginning. And I think that's why generally it's not unpalatable to a lot of people. And I understand and appreciate residents' concerns, and, you know, the most impassioned people come and show up and make their point. Planning board's heard your comments. Planning board will have to make a decision based upon those comments.
May I just, as an abutter, and forgive me that we haven't been here, just two questions. I'll be brief and I won't belabor any. Number one, we've had conversations with both Andrew and with the town about the nature trail. I don't know if this is this an appropriate, question one, is this an appropriate forum to talk about that, or has it been covered? We haven't been here.
Well, the thing is, Peter, that really doesn't impact us. That's between you and the village. That's not a planning board issue. That's an issue between you and the village as far as, and Andrew,
right,
as far as trying to work something out on your property for an extension.
Well, that was one proposal, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so this, so that's not a zoning
no
issue. Okay.
But thank you.
Now, the other question is, there's more of a land use question and probably also not a zoning board issue, or maybe it is, but we have hunting that goes on in that parcel that directly abuts the development. So how does that restrict or affect our use of that parcel for hunting?
Oh, I think honestly, it's you can't discharge a firearm without within 500 feet of a residence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you, it is what it is. You can't tell your neighbors what they can or can't do. They can't develop it for a subdivision.
Right. So it's just that simple, that if it's, because obviously there's no house there now.
Right.
There's one or two being proposed that might be within that. But if we're, as long as we're in 550 feet, just in fairness, a 30-06 going off at 5 o'clock in the morning
that's,
is a cannon. And
that's
I don't
the state regulation on discharge of a firearm. So
okay.
that's not even us locally.
All right. Okay.
I don't think you're supposed to within the limits anyway. He's got land in the town.
All right, George, do you have any comments at all?
No. They've addressed all my engineering comments.
Rob?
I'm good.
All right, what's next?
Well, what would be next is we would close the public hearing, and you would say, let's start to work up documentation as to all these points that we've talked about for months. Let's get it into a document for you guys to review. Make sure all your concerns and all the solutions and all the are put into a format. And then at the next meeting, we would probably consider that document. And then also consider doing the part two and part three of the secret review at the next meeting.
Okay, so we need a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll make the motion.
Second?
Who was the second?
Rick Killerhouse.
And just for our record, let's get an all in favor.
Yeah, all in favor?
Aye.
That's unanimous.
All right, public hearing's closed.
Yep. And we will work with the applicant, I will, and George will give me some assistance and with other approvals that we have. We try and document all the conditions, all the things, the restrictive covenants. We'll take all the documents that we've been submitted. There'll be a bundle, there'll be a package, so that, God forbid, if we were all wiped off the planet 3 months later, someone could take that document and know what was designed, approved, or
okay,
changed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we'll schedule you guys for next month. We should be able to get it done. One more or the other.
Thank you to the planning board for taking our questions, public questions. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Now, Dan, you next?
Dan, you got Dustin tonight.
Oh, you got it?
I don't look like, not quite Dan.
Hold on.
I thought you were looking at me, Bob. Not this Dan.
Chris, thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Next we have Philmont Hall. All right, we got another meeting to hold here, so if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. No, we were
good. We're still working on closing.
All right, we'll talk soon.
All right, once again, the regular meeting of the Philmont Planning Board, June 21st. We'll now hear from Philmont Holdings.
How you doing? I'm Dustin James. I work with Dan Russell at Crawford & Associates. Dan got double booked tonight with a Hillsdale Planning Board meeting. So.
Yeah, he sent me an email.
You said Dustin James?
Yes. Yep. So our project here is a boundary line adjustment of Philmont Holdings' five parcels between Main Street and Elm Street. Basically, we're trying to clean up some of the property lines and encroachments. I think the best way to start off is looking up at the top right before we reconfigure and adjust some of these interior property lines. You see we have a land hook here, part of tax map parcel 113.13-1-17 is actually separated by lot 16. As you kind of look at the map, you can see with the existing property lines, as we've adjusted the lines, the buildings are a little more harmonious with the lines as they're adjusted. We've cleaned up some of the encroachments by adjusting some of these interior property lines. It's only interior lines that are being moved that are all owned by Philmont Holdings. Dan took this project through the ZBA process. All the necessary variances were approved there. This project involves no new construction. There's no change of use. I think the purpose is really, if all five of these lots weren't here, say there were just one lot and the owner's intention were to sell that lot, but say there were an encroachment or something like that, they would need some sort of encroachment agreement or maybe an individual boundary line adjustment. This is kind of attempting to solve all of that with one foul swoop to kind of clean up each individual lot.
What's your end game there?
I think the end game is to be able to sell the lots. I think that is the eventual
yeah, makes sense.
Intention.
Makes sense. I mean, you have some one lot on the left there that would help buy it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of
looks like a quarter.
So all the lots, I think that every lot is actually growing in size. We start off with five tax map parcels, and there is only four in the end product, but there's only three existing buildings. So it's still, you know, it's one building per lot, and then there's one remaining vacant lot.
So we're not creating any new lots. We're actually coming out with one lot.
Exactly.
And they're doing it to fix any encroachments. I mean, the one lot actually is split
by
another, which is, wow, how does that happen? So this is like dropping the cookie jar on the floor and gluing the pieces back together, but in a better format.
Mm-hmm.
So we struggled with, probably to Dan's chagrin, that he had to go to the zoning board first because he's taking boundary lines that were non-compliant with zoning, and he's making them better. But they're still non-compliant with zoning. So the safest thing to do was to have the zoning board approve all those, and they did. They saw it as a project making it better. And then what are you guys doing?
And that's what we're doing.
He can't record a map in the Columbia County Clerk's office with these new delineated lots and be able to sell them or transfer them to other people unless he gets a map that you guys approve and stamp. So it is kind of weird. I get it. Why are we approving five lots into four? Because you're actually going to have a product that you stamp as approved by the Village Planning Board, which allows them to record it and move forward from here.
Okay.
You said there's three buildings involved?
Yes. Yep. What are our addresses? 83 Main Street, and then 3 Elm Street, and 5 Elm Street.
Mm-hmm. Two apartment houses in one.
Yeah.
None of them are...
Two houses in an office, right?
Correct.
When you get that divided, none of them are too close to the boundary lines, the houses, are they?
Not unless it's 19 and 20, and that may be where the variances, I think that's where the variances were granted. So because of that, so they have the variances to be.
And we can't undo anything the zoning board did, correct?
Right, that is correct.
Whatever they approved.
So they approved, the zoning board approved the lines where they proposed them at the limits that they set.
Okay.
And it's making it better, so that's why the zoning board didn't have any objection to it.
Right, but we can't
judge theirs. You can't say, no, make it 22 feet instead of 9 feet.
Right, okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. So I have a question. So I think I reviewed this a while ago, so I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I believe two of the lots are still not in compliance with the zoning. So if an owner comes along and wants to do an extension, do they have to come back to the planning board or the zoning board?
When you say extension, like if they wanted to develop it in a different way?
Either new construction or an extension.
Yes.
Would they have to come back because they're still out of compliance?
If they're not using the same footprint, they would.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
That would trigger a new variance.
Okay.
All right, so I guess we need a motion to accept the application, correct?
Set it for public hearing, yeah.
I make a motion to make sense.
I'll second it.
All right, all in favor?
Rick.
Aye.
Rick made the motion.
Rick made the motion.
Okay.
I second it.
Judy seconded. All right, so we're going to have a public hearing on...
Not yet.
Yeah, I know.
We haven't had, I mean, do we need a boundary? Town of Clover has a boundary line adjustment law that makes them a one meeting process with no public hearing. But be it that we haven't had a subdivision hearing in 6 or 7 years, I don't think we need the law.
Julie 19th, is that correct?
Now, wait a minute. I haven't heard the same thing.
July 19th, correct? All right, so public hearing on July 19th?
Okay.
At 7 o'clock?
I was shocked.
Thank you.
They're like, okay.
Now, he does need a butters.
Don't come back.
He does need a butters list, correct?
No, it's like a subdivision.
Oh, okay.
We don't, no. We don't have to do, okay.
All right, good, so we'll see you. You will come in after the woods again.
All right.
We will try not to be as long-winded.
It might be Dan, maybe it's Dan, it won't be. Now that I've tagged in though, I don't know if I can tag back out, right?
Well, actually, we could probably do you first because yours should be pretty quick. So let's do you at 7 o'clock and we'll do the woods following.
Okay, all right.
And then you got this one.
19th.
Oh yeah, and then we'll have this guy. I'm gonna have to find out what's going on with that.
That's this, so yeah.
Yeah, but I gotta see if,
They wanna make three into one.
I gotta see if Lee has.
Do you have a copy of an application submitted to the planning board?
For holding, for a coma holder?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an application somewhere.
Here, Deb, take one. You can have it. I'm good. Do you want a map too? No.
Again, Dan sent me with some extra maps too if you need any extra maps. We've got.
No.
All right, now.
Oh, yeah, Deb, you got one.
Three other houses.
Now I need. Judy's.
No, we gotta get paid first, but yes, I make a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Well, let's get them vouchers out then. We earned our $30.